This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the play on the show.
Maybe it's that Seahawks fans have just become adrenaline junkies, that you need a certain amount of edge, whether it's excruciating uncertainty and edge of your seat, ride by the seat of your pants, white knuckle thrills, or it is marching in time to a record-setting blowout. If we've really gotten to the point that a relatively innocuous, straightforward, paint-by-numbers type game in which you never trailed is somehow less than satisfactory for your 8-3 Seahawks, I think not, Paul. I think we all can look at that game and said, Seattle did what you're supposed to do in this game. They beat a team that was disorganized on offense. They beat a team whose quarterback was struggling, and there wasn't all that much uncertainty on their path to that victory.
Whether you are a college football power or an NFL team, the message is always the same. Win your clunkers because it's still a W. That's all that matters. Style points do not matter at all in the NFL. And while there were some things that I was not thrilled about in this game, what I am thrilled about is that the Seahawks come out of this 8-3, firm command of the NFC West, as the Cardinals and Rams still have to play each other, what, twice, I think, the rest
yes.
of the way?
Cardinals and Rams are gonna go and peck at each other. And right now, I think you'd root for a split of those games,
yes.
right? You want each team to take an L. And if one team was going to sweep, obviously you'd want it to be the Cardinals who take care of the Rams. But look at what happened in your division. The Cardinals dropped a game to the New England Patriots, and that was on the road. Are the Patriots that much better of a team than the Philadelphia Eagles are?
I think the Eagles are better, actually. I mean, New England had no business winning that game, and yet they still were able to find a way to win that.
And then you look at what happened to the Rams against the San Francisco 49ers.
Same exact thing.
They lost to a team. The Rams lost to a team quarterbacked by bad Nick Mullins. It wasn't even the good version of Nick Mullins. It wasn't even the version that we saw last year. We're like, hey, what's this kid coming in here from Mississippi throwing for 400 yards against the Seahawks? No, they lost to bad, erratic Nick Mullins.
Any given Sunday is the most obnoxious cliche, but it's so true when it comes to the NFL. These guys are paid professionals. And look, you were never, ever remotely in danger in this game.
Can we acknowledge that that's even more true this year? I guess you look at results around the league from week to week, and this is even more true in college football. I feel like things are more unpredictable this year and that there are fewer good, dominant week-in and week-out teams. Right now, in my mind, there are really three teams that are consistently, and I'm not even going to put the Saints in there because you've got a question about their quarterback, and they just got to play a Broncos team that was forced to start a practice wide receiver. A practice squad wide receiver at that position. And given all of that, if you ask me what I wanted to see from the Seahawks yesterday, what I most wanted to see was what we saw. We saw an improved pass rush that continued to follow through with the strides it has made against a disorganized and reconfigured offensive line by the Philadelphia Eagles. You saw Jamal Adams really getting up, and since he came back from the groin injury and then had the shoulder injury a couple weeks ago, clearly looked the best he has. Mm-hmm. Made an impact, provided some energy. I'm not worried about their offense. I'm not. Seeing Seattle's defense continue to take strides toward being adequate is really the most important thing to me.
And one of the biggest things that was a part of that was the Advocates Hit of the Week, starring one Jamal Adams.
Third down and 10. Ward shifts over from left to right. Play fake inside. Wentz is being chased, and he goes down. Jamal Adams gets there all the way back to the 25-yard line. Another sack. That's the fourth one of the night. And this one goes to Jamal Adams as he comes off the corner, and Wentz didn't have a chance.
You know, Danny, if someone comes up to you on the road and crushes you and says, you like that dog? Well, you want to have somebody who's going to fight for you the way that the Advocates can fight for you. So what you have to do is go to advocateslaw.com. If you find yourself in a fender bender or in an accident at work, and they're going to help you out.
Was it similar to what the Kirk Cousins, you like that? Do you really like that? Was that the similar sort of message that Jamal
How you like
Adams
that, dog?
Saying?
Absolutely,
yeah.
Yes.
Or was it Goodwill Hunting? Like, how you like them apples?
Do you like apples? Well, there wasn't the dramatic reveal, right? There was just I'm stepping over you like I'm Allen Iverson and you're Tyronn Lue. And you just have to sit there and wallow in the misery of my shoulder, which is now functional.
Do you feel better about Seattle's defense than you did 4 weeks ago?
Yes. I said going into this game, the biggest thing that the Seahawks can do is put together back-to-back plus defensive performances. Because if you do it twice in a row, this could trend towards becoming a habit. And I know you are very big in believing in the power of slowly building habits. The only way you can build a habit is by doing. Again, it's a collaborative effort as opposed to one person doing it, but this was, I think, a really important step forward. And when you combine the pass rush, they have found a strength of their defense. I don't know if it's necessarily sustainable and if it's an unbeatable strength, but all of a sudden, they are finding ways to get after the passer. And hopefully Carlos Dunlap's foot injury is okay. But they have 19 sacks over the last 4 weeks. You have a calling card and an identity on defense, which the first couple of weeks of the year, you were completely missing.
The reason I think they found that consistency with their pass rush is guys are in the right roles. And you mentioned, we'll ask Pete Carroll about Carlos Dunlap's foot. He and Michael Bumpus will be with us at the bottom of the hour here for the Pete Carroll show. But Carlos Dunlap's foot, hoping that he's healthy and get his presence allows guys to be in their right roles. Benson Mayowa is a really good nickel pass rusher. He's not someone you want playing all three downs. Rasheem Green is someone that you want to throw in there again in the nickel pass rush situation. He's probably not a starting defensive end in this league. And right now, the way you have a situation where Carlos Dunlap allows Benson Mayowa and Rasheem Green to be your nickel pass rushers, joining Dunlap and Jaron Reed. And that leaves Puna Ford and other guys to use to be in your base defense. It puts guys in their right spots. It allowed guys, LJ Collier is great in that first and second down. You've got the right rotation right now. And I think that Carlos Dunlap's addition in that way is going to be huge. He allows guys to be in the right spots.
Yeah. And that's big to have going forward. Now, a text accurately points out on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, I love how before the Eagles game, you guys said this game wouldn't show how much better the Seahawks are. Now that the game was closer, you keep talking about how good the Seahawks are. But here's the thing. Again, the Seagulls offense has some serious issues. All you can ask for in a game like this is for the defense to do what it did last week. Now, we'll see in the playoffs just how much of a stride this defense has taken forward. They're not going to go up against a plus offense the rest of the way. I don't consider the Rams among that, even though the Rams had their way with the Seahawks last time around.
And that's the best thing for the Seahawks. People will think this iron sharpens iron thing. You want this defense to have confidence. You want this defense to believe and trust in what other guys are doing and to go into whatever matchup. It's the idea that you're going to be better for having faced better competition. You could equally say that facing those better teams, if you don't do well, is going to destroy whatever confidence you had. So that idea that there's nothing to be proven, there's nothing to be learned over these next four games before that Rams game, not true. There's a ton that this defense can gain, and I do believe that they gained that they showed. Does it convince you that they're going to be a dominant and adequate defense when the playoffs start? No. But it puts them taking another step toward feeling that way.
And I would just point at the variety of different players who stepped up in this game. Shaquille Griffin, who gave little separation. KJ Wright with that big deflected pass on fourth down. And he has been really good on the edge. All of the Seahawks' edge defenders, Jordan Brooks too, as far as setting that edge and staying home and being disciplined. Bobby Wagner made a play downfield in coverage. Maybe not the same Bobby Wagner of old, but that was a hell of a play to run downfield with that guy. Jaron Reed killed Miles Sanders. That was one of my favorite hits of the game. Miles Sanders is cutting out and he just goes right into Jaron Reed's shoulder. Boom, goes down. You could say he got lost in the Reed. Rasheem Green and Benson Mayowa even had sacks. Alton Robinson had a sack. LJ Collier looked good. There are a lot of people that you can point to and say this was a part of a collaborative effort, and it started with Jamal Adams. Can you really point at somebody and say, ooh, maybe with some Trey Flowers moments, and maybe you say, well, I wish that Quandre Diggs could have built off of what he did last week. I mean, that interception that Carson Wentz threw to him was essentially a punt. But this was a collaborative effort, and while I'm not going to say it's a giant step forward, all you can do at this point is try to sustain the level of play that you did last week. I think you did.
Danny and Gallant, Pete Carroll is coming up at the bottom of the hour. First, we've got to take you around the NFL. That's coming up next.
It's time to go around the NFL. Brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
Hello, DJ.
Hello. Happy Victory Tuesday. Yeah, Victory Tuesday. Okay. Well, the Ravens and Steelers game has been postponed once again to tomorrow.
Wednesday night football.
12:40 p.m. Pacific time.
Wait.
Oh, it's 12:40. It's even earlier than
what?
I thought.
Wait,
yeah,
what?
Let me double check on that, but I'm pretty sure they said on ESPN it said 3:40.
You're
Who
right.
knows what time zone
you're
going.
You're
yet.
Right, because so Adam Schefter tweeted this out last night and everyone was like, what? Are you just shilling for the Rockefeller Center lighting of the tree? But
it's because NBC carries it.
Yeah. So this is going to be a Wednesday afternoon game. I think a lot of people are going to be calling it sick to work in Pittsburgh and Baltimore on Wednesday.
It's really funny. So you're going to get basically a businessman special on the West Coast.
Wow, man.
12:30 start.
Wow. A rivalry game in the middle of the afternoon. That is something else.
Do we know who's going to be eligible for the Ravens to play? Because they've lost like 10 players.
They do have their two running backs, J.K. Dobbins and Mark Ingram. Lamar Jackson will not be able to play tomorrow. I know that.
Robert Griffin III. That means he will
RG3.
Be out there. I'm actually curious to see what he still has left. I don't think he is a total husk at this point in his career. We'll see, though.
Last time we saw him was with Cleveland, right? Was that his last start?
Yes.
And he got drilled. Like, just showed no understanding of how to avoid contact. Just got hammered. Maybe that'll happen this game.
I will give RG3 this. When he was in Washington that one year, I actually liked his ability to throw the football down the field, and Baltimore honestly needs that at this point. This is wishful thinking, because I honestly want to see someone unseat the Steelers, who really got the short end of this one. It's a couple of times this year where the COVID rescheduling has seriously affected them through no fault of their own.
What gets higher ratings, this or the Christmas tree lighting ceremony thing?
Oh, it'll be the football game.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Come on. It's football.
Yeah. Last night, the NFL ordered team facilities to close until Wednesday to slow the spread of COVID-19.
Is this going to work? I mean, I get it. You want to break the chain of transmission or like not have anybody around each other. But if people have the virus, having them not be around each other for 2 days, I guess it gives more time for if someone who is positive, for that person to test positive before they go into the facility. But yeah, you're going to see, it's just basic math, man. Like the virus is spreading all over the country and infection rates are rising. It's going to rise within NFL teams.
2 days away from work, away from the locker room, close confines. It could help. It could, but right now we're throwing stuff at the wall. I would say as far as governmental restrictions, when it comes to things that are COVID-19 related, there doesn't really seem to be, from anybody right now, a true plan. Because guess what? It's a pandemic. What can you really do to slow it down? I mean, it can still be spread, even if you're wearing a mask. It can still be spread in a variety of different ways. I hope this helps the NFL out, but it's just 2 days. Eventually, they're all going to reconvene.
There is... And this happens within the media, too. They're characterizing it like the NFL has done a great job to have only no games canceled so far and everything college football. Look, you can play the games. Like, playing the games is not some sort of achievement. It's a matter of how you're managing the risk. Closing facilities for 2 days is a step to mitigate the risk. It doesn't eliminate it. Players are still going to be moving within their communities. They're not in a bubble. Yes, guys that got it over Thanksgiving now might test positive in the interim, and you keep them from being around their teammates and keep them from getting infected. But this is not some sort of thing to be applauded. It's a matter of whether the risk is acceptable or not that the NFL is subjecting its players to. And they're doing as good a job as they can. But I don't know. You're gonna have more and more players that are going to test positive. That's just how it's going to go.
They're clinging to... no week 18, although it seems like they're more open to it than they had been as far as game cancellations, but still not extending the season. I don't get it. What is the problem? What is it that you need to stick to this schedule that you set in stone. You can move the Super Bowl back. How many people are going to be in the stands? Don't you want to push it back, in fact, so that there might be a chance to have people in the stands?
The honest answer to that is they don't want a bunch of teams finishing at different points, because then teams are going to be complaining about extra rest. That's the issue. They're not. You're not going to look at what happened. Look how mad Denver's team got about the different things. You're going to hear all of these players and coaches scream about the unfairness of it, because, well, it is going to be kind of unfair if you add three teams end up that make the playoffs have to play in week 18.
I'm with you in that. That's likely a reason, but I mean, the NFL should have forced all these teams to go into bubbles if they felt that they were going to stick to this schedule. And even then, that might not have 100% worked. And also, at this point, tough bleep. If these things happen, like, you knew this was going to potentially happen this year, where you might actually have an eighth team added into the playoffs. I mean, we saw it in baseball at the last second. All right, we have a 16-team playoff. What? Like, this was going to happen in the NFL. There is no need for them to be so resolute in getting from point A to point B as quickly as possible. It's okay to get a hotel room and spend a night off the road so you don't end up crashing into a ditch while you fall asleep.
It is Danny and Gallant. We've got the coach, Pete Carroll, along with Michael Bumpus. We're going to talk to him next.
This is how we play. This is what we do.
The Pete Carroll Show. The first word from the Seahawks head coach every Monday at 9:30 with Danny and Gallant.
Let's capture exactly how this happened and just keep on recreating it one week at a time.
Presented by Banner Bank on 710 ESPN Seattle.
It was a different Pete Carroll show today. We got the head coach right on the heels of his arrival in Seattle after the Seahawks' victory over the Philadelphia Eagles. We audibled as best we could, and we brought him in for an early bird special. Pete Carroll show begins right now, and we are joined by the head coach on the heels of another victory, this time 23-17 over the Philadelphia Eagles last night. Pete, congratulations on the win.
Well, thanks. It seems like it was just yesterday.
So now you guys back here, and what's your biggest takeaway from this victory, a game where the defense for the second straight week really put together a complete effort?
I think the thing that stands out the most is this weekend, that we had a chance to capture what happened in the division by winning, and we came through and got it done. That forget all the rest of the stuff. You know, we got a good win. The other teams in the division had trouble and struggled, and so it put us in a good position going forward. It was a really good night for the defense. The defense played great football tonight, best we've played, and it kind of fit right together with last week's game too, which is really important that we can start to build some momentum here and really start improving on our scheme. We're playing the defense better, and it's because of the familiarity, and guys are really getting comfortable with it.
Coach, it seemed chippy out there. It seemed really intense. Was this the most intense atmosphere thus far this season?
I don't know. It just started out that way, you know, Mike, because DK was getting after him a little bit, and they didn't like, you know, the way he was getting after the blocking part of the early, you know, couple plays of the game. And our guys handled it great, and they made a couple of mistakes and caused a couple of big penalties to happen. And we didn't take advantage of it in that drive, but still kind of set the tone.
I've gotten a kick out of seeing defensive backs grow frustrated with DK. And I don't know if it's because he is so willing to block and maybe block to the whistle, but we've seen this a couple of times now where not only has DK gotten under their skin, where they have, for whatever reason, decided that it's a good idea to challenge a 6'3", 240-pound wide receiver.
Yeah, well, they're trying to stand up to him. He's got a real factor about him. You know, he's so physical, and he knows it, and he gets after him, and he's unusual in that regard, and the guys don't like it. So it's kind of fun. The good part about it is DK knows what's going on, and he's really poised, and he's not getting himself in any trouble at all. He's just kind of he's stirring it up a bit.
Got six sacks last night, and a few weeks ago you told us, you said, hold on, guys, this is going to get better. These guys are going to turn a corner, and we're starting to see it. What are you seeing out of that defensive line that's really allowing them to get after the quarterback lately?
Yeah, it was really good to see so many different guys contribute, you know, and factor in. Everybody was rushing the passer well. they've had problems, you know, and they've been working through it, and we took advantage of it. You know, we were able to get that done, and I think really Carlos continues to be kind of the fire starter here. You know, he got this thing going a little bit, and we've been improving since he arrived, but there's a lot of guys that contributed and got after it. We saw Jamal again have a couple big rushes and some problem causing in the backfield, so it's really exciting to see it. It's fun for us to make that change in the middle of the year. I know people were thinking we were dead and gone, but we ain't dead yet. We're still going.
Was that Jamal's best performance thus far? He was awesome, and my favorite moment in the game was after a hit on, I think, the left sideline where he got up over him and says, "You like that, dog?" Very amusing moment for me.
Yeah, it was his best game, and this is the best he's felt. He just was able to play, you know, with his right shoulder, it just made a difference. He was balanced out in his tackling, and he fit into things really well. He was really aggressive in the backfield on a number of runs, and he was really having fun playing football. He had a blast tonight.
Bobby has 100 tackles for the ninth season in a row, but the play of the game for me when he's running with Goddard down the middle of the field, is that an underrated part of his game, the pass coverage?
Yeah, it always has been, you know, he made a great play on that ball. He should have received a little more help than he got, but it just showed you, the versatility. I mean, it's all those, you know, thousands of tackles that he's made, but all of the rest of the game that he brings is really a complete package. And you know, I was talking about him earlier. I guess that was tonight. I don't know what night it was. But he's just a Hall of Famer. That's just what he's going to be. And we're watching it right before our eyes, you know, just kind of happen. He's a marvelous competitor.
We finally saw Shaquille Griffin back out on the field too. And this was a game where from the get-go, not a lot of separation created between him and Philadelphia's wide receivers. What did you make of his performance?
Yeah, he played really well. It was really aggressive in coverage and was very consistent too. I was concerned about him. You know, he's jumping back right into the fray after being gone for a couple of weeks. I watched him in practice this week, so that's why I was concerned about him a little bit. But he really cleaned things up and played really sharp football, and I thought he made a great play on the ball that he got the penalty called on too. It was all over the receiver like he needed to be. So he had a really good first game back, and that's a great boost to us.
Leading up to the game, there were whispers about Jalen Hurts maybe getting some reps. Did you guys prepare at all for Jalen Hurts, and would that have changed your approach if you did get more playing time?
It really didn't change our approach, but we did prepare for him, and we were looking for him coming in and the two-quarterback thing that they did at times. And we had heard a lot of scuttlebutt just prior to the game and the day before that he was going to play a lot, and so we're kind of surprised he didn't, you know, so... But it wasn't going to change much. Their offense wasn't – we didn't feel like the offense would change, and there wasn't many things we needed to adjust. So we just needed to play his part of the game, which is the quarterback run aspect, well when he jumped up.
This is more a question about the Philadelphia Eagles, but it's been sort of strange to see the issues that they've had this year. In person, were you able to get a feel for maybe what's been holding them back? Because this has been a real disappointing season for them.
Yeah, it's really obvious. They've had trouble with their offensive line, and they've been sacked a lot. They've run the ball really well. They've been one of the best running teams in the league, but they've just had trouble in pass protection, and they've had 10 different starting offensive lines.
Yeah,
so, I mean, that's the whole story, and it's like that is the story, and that's what happens to the quarterback when the quarterback plays with guys that are running in the backfield at him. And we were, you know, we had 6 sacks and could have had 10. You know, we were all over him, and so that's the name of that tune. You know, and everybody wants to think of all these other reasons and all, but it's just really hard with that kind of pass rush. You know, and the guy's a really good ball player, and he can do all kinds of things, but it's hard, and it gets harder. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't get easier, and you know, and so it's going to be a. It's just a tough season for him.
Chris Carson was back, had 41 yards and a touchdown. I told someone, it didn't feel like 41. It just felt different with Chris Carson back there. What was it like? What does he do to your offense?
Yeah, I agree with that, Mike. He his style of play is just, you know, just we love it so much. It seemed like a lot more yards than that. You know, he didn't carry the ball that many times either, you know, but he was really a factor. He looked great. and because of the catches he had as well, you know, and he started right off the game getting the ball, and he just looked terrific. And so I'm hoping that he comes out of the game feeling all right, didn't get banged up much, and can you know, keep doing it next week. Carlos played good too, but it was really Chris had the bigger plays on this night, and the touchdown run was just a fantastic play. That was so cool, the way the cuts that he made, and then the finish and the explosion at the goal line, you know, it was a beautiful play.
Coach, has to be a pretty good feeling for your team to come back after that win. What did you think of DK Metcalf's performance?
He had a great game. He was really physical right from the get-go. You know, the first slant he catches and he gets pounded by McLeod and he runs over him, you know, and makes a finishes that play really aggressively. A couple plays later, they're pushing and shoving and all that, and he's making his presence known, and he just stayed with it, you know, throughout the night. Really close to just an extraordinary night. You know, he had the ball in the corner of the end zone that he really could have caught, and you know, it was kind of an unusual situation. But and then he had one on the sidelines he might have been able to pull in too. So he had a great night anyway, and was, you know, really dominant.
What do you make of the guys? It's a couple times now, Drake Kirkpatrick in the Arizona game and in this game. What do you make of those guys that have kind of taken exception or gotten bent out of shape? Are they trying to knock DK out of his game? Are they just trying to compete? What do you make of it when opponents challenge one of your players like that?
Well, I think, you know, it's just, there's varying reasons why, but you know, they don't want to. They know he's got a physical presence. They know that there's going to be a lot of people watch and see what happens and see how it goes. And so they're all geared up for it. And sometimes, you know, the emotions, you know, kind of bubble over and all that. But also they want to stand up to him, you know, and they don't want to be dogged by him. He's physical enough and has a style of play in his blocking that is unique and unusual. And they don't want to back down to him. But yet, he better look out too, you know, because he's coming after you. And it's just he has really embraced this whole way of playing that we all are just thrilled about, because it's so cool to see a guy have that much impact in so many situations, you know. So the guy's just getting jacked up, and it's a nice, colorful part of the game.
You guys went for it twice early in the first half. They didn't go your way. What went wrong on those two plays?
Well, we missed a block on the play on the goal line, right at the point of attack. We didn't execute well, and we didn't get around the corner, so that play got busted up. But more than that, I felt like, and I just kind of took this one. I didn't handle the rhythm of it, of the fourth down situations, either one of them very well. And I'm not going to give you everything about that, but I'll tell you that there's a sequence of events that sets up those. You know, sometimes you can really anticipate that you're going to be in a four down situation, and then sometimes it jumps up on you, and it's how you handle that. And I just felt like I didn't help Shoddy out enough with the timing of it, and that's why we said, you know, okay, let's take the timeouts and take a look at them. And so anyway, I was kicking myself in the butt all up and down the sidelines. You couldn't tell, but I was pissed, and I just didn't do that as well as I needed to. I didn't give our guys the best chance to execute right there. So I got to do better.
We all watched The Last Dance this offseason. It was a fantastic documentary about Michael Jordan, and I think DK Metcalf might have tapped into that a little bit last night. Going into the game, Jim Schwartz, I guess, came up to him and made some comments about, at least for DK, how he's not quite at Calvin Johnson's level yet. And TK, after the game, made it very clear that this was something that bothered him. And maybe that's why he had the dominant performance. The ways that he finds chips to put on his shoulder and self-motivate, I'm always fascinated by. What did you make of just DK and his response to what he heard?
Well, Coach Schwartz can say whatever he wants. That was kind of unusual that he would bring something like that up, you know. Megatron's kind of a thing of the past, you know, not many people know about that. I mean, if he'd have said something referred to him like the Mandalorian, you know, I think it'd be a little more appropriate. I wouldn't mind calling DK the Mandalorian anytime he wants. But I don't know. You know, the coaches get to say whatever they want. I thought that was kind of surprising. But I like the way DK handled it. You mentioned, the documentary that we all watched, you know, this summer, our whole team watched it, and we talked about it all throughout the offseason, you know. if you notice how Michael did it, Michael always found a reason. He always was. Guys that have that mentality are always on the alert for, give me something to juice me up and let me at you, you know. So that was a classic example of that, you know. What it did for him, how it fueled him, I don't know. He was fired up anyway, you know. But it's kind of the fun part of getting cranked up and you know, you kind of don't want to, you want to let that sleeping dog, you know, lay, you know, wake him up and kick him, you know. I thought it was really cool that DK took it that way. And what better than that? And had a game that he had, you know, yeah. And to answer to it. That's the cool thing.
Coach, you got a good rotation going on that D-line. And I'm looking at LJ. He's playing inside. He's playing outside. Is that something you had in mind when you drafted him, or something that's kind of developed over the season?
No. We thought he could play inside and outside. We didn't know, you know, how effective he would be as a pass rusher. I think he's having a really good season. He's been really active and really consistent his attitude's been great, and his effort's been excellent. You know, he's having a fine year for us.
When you look at the different guys, way guys get motivated, and I'll go back to the Michael Jordan thing here. It's interesting when you have a player that uses something external or something else diminishing them. What drives Russell's competitiveness?
Oh, that's a really good question, Danny, because it's really deep and it goes way back. You know, his upbringing, his father had such an impact on him. His mother had an impact on him. They had very, very high expectations for Russ, and he was willing to accept them. You know, where some kids would you'd feel the pressure and you feel like you never can measure up and all that. Russell never took it that way. He always took it in a way that fueled him. And I don't know if he ever didn't take it that way. I would imagine, just from how I know him, that his father had a really unique way of communicating to him what he could be and what life holds for him. If he would attack it and approach it in a particular manner, it would take him to places that other people would never reach. And Russell figured that out and has always, in the time I've known him, has always been connected to a really clear thought of high, high, high achievement and the highest of expectations. I can't remember if I told you guys this, but he handed me a typed out one pager of his goals, like about the, I don't know, first or second month he was in the building, you know, and he was pretty much on it now. I mean, who does that? You know, who would do that? Who would type it up and hand it to somebody, you know? But he did. And he did it because he wanted it to be known, you know, what he's going for. And in essence, he challenged me. And as I took it later on, I realized, shoot, he's calling on me to, you know, always hold me to the standards of the highest achievers that you know, we can imagine. And so I don't know exactly, but that's my thought about it.
It's amazing to watch what he's done, but kind of the poise and the control he continues to play with. Like last night's game, the understanding of the circumstances, he really is someone who he's developed into this sort of consummate sort of field general, the way he commands everything and kind of calms guys down. It's pretty remarkable because I don't ever remember him not being that way. Yet right. it's even more so the poise that he has now.
Yeah, he's better at it now than he was, you know, he's just grown. He's just matured through it, but it isn't any different. You're right. It was exactly the same source. He is as original a soul as you can get, and he just conveys the message better than he ever has in the past, and he'll continue to be great at it. And the players receive him so well now, you know, and they know who he is, and they know what he expects and what he stands for, and they respect the heck out of him, and they should, you know, he's doing everything a guy could want to do.
Is that something someone is born with? Is it something that over time they can develop, that ability to motivate oneself? You saw it with DK Metcalf really early, and were telling us about that last year. Russ seems to have had it for a long time, and you've coached a lot of guys who seem to have this ability to really push themselves to a degree that maybe
other athletes don't quite have the ability to get to.
Yeah, you know, Paul, there's familiar characteristics of the makeup, you know, and it is about guys that just are not satisfied. You know, they just won't, you know, nothing really ever fills them up. They got to keep, you know, clawing and scratching to get more and to do more and to be more and all that. There's a commonality about that. I do definitely think you can teach somebody, you can make them aware more so, and they can get grittier, you know, they can learn to persevere more, and they can learn to bounce back better and be more resilient, you know, and I even think people can get connected to passion. Those are all the elements of grit, which is really what we're talking about. But that only to a certain extent. And matter of fact, Angela Duckworth, who's the foremost, you know, professor on grit, would tell you that it's you can't expand somebody's makeup that much, but you can enhance it. Now she does believe that now. Is it born? I don't know if it's born into you or not, but somewhere along the line, something touches you on the shoulder and makes you aware of, you know, that you want to do great things and you want to be special and you're not going to back off or anything. I don't know. I wish I knew the answer to that.
Now, Pete, you're very, very nice, and Angela Duckworth is really worthwhile for people to read, but she credits you with enhancing her understanding of how grit can be enhanced. So it's kind of been a collaborative process there in understanding how to bring the most out of competitors.
Yeah, well, not many people realize that, but that is kind of the truth. But she hadn't had the availability of the arena. You know, she was doing all of the academic side of it, and you know, we've been been test tube babies out here for a long time, you know, and working on, you know, how you can affect people and how you can motivate and inspire and nurture and all of that, and she just hadn't had the same opportunity that we had had. And I didn't know, it was just my instinct that you could, you know. So my interaction with her, I don't know where we're going with this, but my interaction with her a long time ago was, you know, I challenged her about it, and she came back and she took the challenge, and in time we came to an agreement that there is some area that you can, you know, you can develop grit and all that.
Coach, this team is full of big names and personalities. You got Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, Jamal. I mean, the list goes on and on. But there was a time I saw a dime package and I saw Ryan Neal and Ugo Amadi out there. How important are these lower profile athletes to your football team?
They're really important. They're important as anybody. You know, they've got their roles, and we're developing them, you know, more as we go and fitting it together. This is what we were trying to do a long time ago. We just didn't have everybody around, you know. And you know, I wish it would have fit together sooner, but the guys weren't available. But we're gaining some flexibility, and as we close out this, you know, with this stretch here at the end of the season, hopefully leading us into the playoffs, we're gonna have a really an in-depth approach to how we're doing what we're doing, and really specializing our guys. And everybody's important in that regard. Everybody, we're counting on everybody. The rotation of the guys up front, you know, and how they do the stuff they do, and as we learn and as we see them, you know, really start to champion some stuff, it helps us pinpoint and zero in on stuff. We're improving and growing the whole time.
We saw Jamal Adams. I don't know if it was his best game that he's had as a Seahawk, but he certainly made his presence felt. It's a great sack, but he had a play where he kind of came on a delayed rush after the quarterback, then reacted to whether it was a pass, I can't remember, was it a screen pass, but he clobbered the heck out of a running back downfield. It seemed like he announced his presence last night in that game.
Yeah, he was part of a pressure that the ball got thrown really quickly, and he just beeline turned, you know, whipped it around and hit it out and we had a little missed tackle and kind of situation, and he just blasted the guy. He really had his best game, I think, and I think this is just an indication of where it's going. He's going to continue to get better too, and it's really exciting. I was really thrilled for him because he finally felt whole tonight, you know, and he's been really hampered, and so he was having a ball. It was really fun watching him.
19 sacks over 4 games. I mean, the pass rush has really delivered and has been productive over this stretch. What, I imagine it's not as simple as saying, oh, what's the difference? But
there you go.
What's the difference?
Baby ball. It isn't that easy. Yeah. Right. The difference is it's a coming together of the players, the scheme, their continuity, the continuity that comes from guys playing together, you know, all aspects of it. And it's been coming. I mean, the potential's been here since we saw it back in camp. We just got, you know, and then obviously Carlos has had a big impact, and we needed somebody to be a factor in the pass rush, and unfortunately Bruce wasn't able to do that for us, you know, by getting banged up, and then we saw Benson Mayoa get banged up, and it kind of steamrolled on us for a little bit, or snowballed on us for a little bit, and now we're starting to feel it, and hopefully we'll keep everybody out there and keep them, hammering away at that quarterback.
One last question on that Carlos front. He left the game with a foot injury. I know you guys just got back, but how's he doing?
Yeah, he's got a sore foot, and we don't know what it is. There's something on the bottom of his foot, and he's his 5:45 or 6:45 a.m. MRI will know a lot more. He was kind of upset because we got in an hour early, and he's got to wait around for his MRI. So,
Pete. We hope that you keep building the momentum. We talked on a little bit of everything. Russell's competitiveness, talked some grit. We appreciate you taking the time this morning, and congratulations. This is so much fun to watch, and now you'll be home for 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's going to be really, really fun to get back in, settle in, and just keep driving it. It's just out there for us, you know. We just got to keep battling, and we're going to do it. Everybody's going to be in tune and focused and all that. Now we're going to see how far it can take us. You know, it's going to be really exciting, and so it's good to be home. I wish we could get our fans coming out and being with us. You know, since we're just sitting here and it's the middle of the night, and your show, we're not on the air yet, right?
No, so, not yet.
Right, so we could just hang around for a while because I got nowhere to go. I don't know about you guys.
You know? See, I'm assuming you got to go home and get at least a few hours of sleep on a night where you fly overnight. Like, you can't go straight to work.
Why would you want to go to sleep now, you know? Anyway. Hey, well, thanks. Appreciate you guys. Thanks for getting up early and catching up with us. And let's have a big week. Here we go.
We will. We'll let you hear us even though we're not in the stadium. We appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
That's going to do it for us. Danny and Gallant here. Want to say thank you to Brock Heward for joining us this morning, the Professor John Clayton, Michael Bumpus, who was part of the Pete Carroll Show, to the coach for making that time after they had gotten back on an overnight flight. DJ Wilder kept everything centered, and he is Paul Gallant, and don't try to antagonize him by comparing him and telling him he's no Megatron.
And he is Danny O'Neill, and would you look at that? He kept me from complaining after a Seahawks victory. We can make progress. We can change. If you could change, we could all change. Coming up next, it's me. So don't go anywhere.
That's right. No Danny, just Gallant.